So the first talk is going to be about using telehealth to improve outcomes in federally qualified health centers. That's my disclosure statement. And again, I wanted to talk about some of the barriers we see in rural areas. How many are from rural America or rural other country? Okay. And talk about some of those applications we can use in primary care to meet the triple aim, which of course is improving costs, decreasing cost, improving access, and improving quality of care for our patient, as well as how to use the team approach in a patient-centered medical home to reach those outcomes. This is who we are. I'm from New York State. Yes, the snow country. Even though it's cold today, it's snowing in New York. We are a federally qualified health center. We started as Finger Lakes Community Health is our name. We started as a migrant health program back in 1989 and now have grown to 9 community health centers in the Finger Lakes region of New York State. It's a beautiful region if anybody's ever been there. And we also administer migrant health in 42 counties in New York State. Again, very rural. Rochester and Syracuse are our urban areas. It can be over a 100-mile round trip for our patients to go to some of the urban centers for some of the tertiary specialty care. And as you can imagine, providing health care to the rural poor is quite a challenge, particularly farm workers and other low-income minority groups. Many barriers to care, they're listed here for you. So you have to be very innovative when you think about how you're going to provide health care to these populations. So we have mobile health teams, which is one way. You know, we have very flexible hours, bilingual, bicultural staff. But in 2008, our CEO was a real champion for telemedicine and found some funding for us to develop our own network and our own program, and I was hired as the program development person for the clinical side of things. And I utilized the American Telemedicine Association. For those of you new to telehealth, this is really the body that is a great resource. They publish standards of care if you're developing telemedicine programs, really much, pretty much in remote care monitoring, ophthalmology, dermatology, whatever you can think of. They have great standards that they refer to. They have a wonderful conference every year, twice a year actually, journals. They really publish the research studies to show that there's good evidence with this. So, wonderful resource. Now, the benefits of telehealth have been well documented. It started really with NASA monitoring astronauts back in the 60s, but in the early 90s was when the federal government came out with some money, and big centers like UC Davis, University of Arizona, and such developed these telehealth programs. And it's really shown to reduce travel. Patients get very timely appointments, and we've been able to demonstrate that as well. The remote providers love it because they really feel that they can connect with specialists in urban areas, and it really helps patients in the healthcare system overall. So for our programs at Finger Lakes, these are the ones that we've done successfully. Teledentistry, which I'm going to talk about a little later, telepsychiatry, telemental health, which is counseling by our licensed clinical social workers, ENT consults, diabetes care, mostly in the form of retinopathy screening in the primary care setting, child neurology, pulmonology, and that's focused on occupational pulmonary medicine for our farm workers, tele-AC, which is AIDS care, HIV care, tele-RD, our dietitian is doing dietitian nutrition counseling. She's also a certified diabetic educator, can use the telehealth equipment to do that. Tele-MD, we staff a lot of our health centers with mid-levels, so to have an MD that can precept them is one way they can use the telehealth equipment as well. And we're just starting to be a new program of Hep C consults. So this is typical systems in our health centers. We use real-time video conferencing with very high-definition cameras. You can transmit lung sounds over the internet. This is all HIPAA-secured internet. There's special cameras that are designed. Lots of stuff out there with terms of equipment. But you shouldn't get wrapped all up in the technology and the little gadgets. It's really about taking care of patients. So we always start with identifying, you know, where the gap is in our care. And then we do a lot of detailed program planning, whether it be administrative, working on contracts and credentialing, the IT piece, which is working on the connectivity network, and the clinical workflows and operations and such. We really need to spend time with a specialist because we need to be their remote office. And, of course, everything's documented, and we start with small pilots to make sure that we have success. We create registries of our patients so that we can follow them. As well as care coordination. The care coordination is working with a team to, whether patients no-show for appointments or they need lab work or whatever it may be, it's doing the care coordination remotely, and then, of course, doing quality assurance based on their needs, as well as the program evaluations. In terms of training telepresenter, we use mid-levels for all our telepresenting. That's on the remote rural end, whether it be a hygienist or a mid-level. On our end, we use trained professionals because you really need to assist with the exam and have it high quality on the other end. And then we use our community health worker staff as well to address some of the social determinants of health. So here are some of the outcomes that we've accomplished, and I'll talk about our tooth fairy in a little bit. For telepsychiatry, we had a psychiatrist in our community, Finger Lakes Health, which is the hospital system, who was doing consults to help our primary care patients manage depression and anxiety, and not the major mental health illnesses, but more of the things that you would see typically in primary care but may need a little help with. And we had really positive results with this. We saw decreases in PHQ-9 scores. Normally in the Medicaid system in our area, it would take 9 months to get a consult with a psychiatrist. Our average was 19 days. And because our social worker was kind of huddling with the psychiatrist before and after the consult, treatment was immediately initiated. They could start the medications, you know, within 24 hours of the consult. Patients and provider love this, and, typical of this population, we did have some loss to follow-up, but no one else referred into higher level of care. So now we're looking at other child, adolescent, adult psychiatry, using actually them managing the patients rather than our primary care, and as well as addiction medicine. For the diabetes piece, you know, retinopathy, we need an annual eye exam on our diabetic to prevent the retinopathy, the blindness that could be, that is in adults. So we purchased these cameras on site. They're very simple to use. We trained our lay health workers to take the digital images. And what we found was, in April of 2011, when we started this project, we did a baseline chart review, and we felt very few of our patients were getting in to have this done, whether it be community or the farm workers, uninsured or insured. So within 3 months of starting this project, you can see that the graph, it went sky high. Between 80 and 100% were getting their screenings done. And now, 2 years later, we're still about 70% in our health centers having the screening done, having that camera on site. When we got the funding to do that, we also were challenged by HRSA to improve all diabetes outcomes. So we worked with our registry and from our registry with our patient center medical home, and were able to actually meet all of the indicators for the NCQA Diabetes Recognition Award. So that was a great team effort, all spurred by the telemedicine. Peds neurology, we are using a pediatric nurse practitioner who specializes in kids with ADHD. She's helping our primary care docs manage these kids. That was a pilot that we had done in 2013. Again, this person was in Rochester at the University of Rochester Strong Hospital. We were able to decrease time to treatment. Again, normally a two-month waiting list. We were able to get our kids in within just over a month. We exceeded all the performance measures. A lot of them had changes to their medication regimens. As typical, many were diagnosed with comorbidities of mental health, and we were able to access care for them as well. And again, high provider and patient satisfaction, and 63% showed improvement at school or home. And last year we did a program with Trillium Health, which is in Rochester. Again, that's the HIV one of the HIV specialty providers, nonprofit organizations in Rochester. We have patients out in the Finger Lakes area that have HIV, and they would have to travel, probably anywhere, like I said, from 30 to 100 miles to get their care. So we put the remote video conferencing on site and put the registries in, the care coordination, and these were the outcomes we saw with that. Improved adherence to appointments, the HIV fee standards actually improved as well in terms of negative viral loads, improved CD4 counts, and all the preventive screenings as well improved with that. This is Ruby. She's our little robot that sometimes when we have patients come to some of our health centers and there's not bilingual people available, our interpreters could be at another site and they can drive little Ruby down into the room and interpret for providers. This is a little gadget that everybody likes. Another use for telehealth, again, is for education purposes. So we've trained our board in migrant health. We've trained our staff in some of these specialty care. You know, we got community health workers that are learning about Hep C. And again, the specialists can come in by video conference and do this. We hold our staff meetings this way. We've actually saved, I think, $55,000 a year when our staff don't have to travel. They can all come in from different sites and have a staff meeting. So I like this diagram of the triple aim because it shows the patients in the center, patient-centered care, surrounded by better health, best care, value for the money. But the bottom, it's all built on your staff. And so we really try to take our time with our staff because implementing telehealth, it's like implementing the EMRs. It's major change, so you really have to support the staff during this process. So the lessons learned, if you're considering a telehealth program, you know, we need buy-in from the top. Look for your champions. The project manager, you know, biting ankles, keeping things on task to get the program off the ground. And recognizing that telemedicine can be a tool. Any gap that you're seeing wherever you are is one. Telemedicine can be the tool to improve outcomes in that particular service. And to focus on your details when you're doing program development. And know that program management takes forever, and quality assurance is a big part of that. So if I'll invite questions, I think I've got maybe 5 minutes. Yep. Sure. I don't know if you want to use the mic or... Yeah. We in the pilots, we did satisfaction surveys, and almost 100% they liked it. They particularly liked it in psych. A lot of women, for instance, had been sexually abused and were seeing a male psychiatrist. They did not want to be in the same room. They loved telehealth when it came to that. The kids love it. We have little 2- or 3-year-olds, you know, open their mouth for a dental exam that normally, you know, are fighting with them because they can see themselves on TV and they're making faces to the pediatric dentist. And so for the most part, I would say 90% of the time. There's a few patients that don't like it. Of course, we always give them the option. They have to sign a special consent, you know, saying that they authorize this use, and they know that, you know, basically the equipment can shut down any minute during the consult. So, but majority of patients really like it. Yes. Okay, good question. Depending on the state that you're in and the setting that you're in, again, if you're the specialist and you work for a hospital system, Medicare, Medicaid, a lot of the insurers are paying for these consults. Straight fee, whatever your fee is, they pay for it. If you're an FQHC like we are, we had, for our dietitian to be able to bill between health centers, like she's sitting, you know, in Penn Yan and wants to talk to somebody 50 miles away in sodas, because she's bilingual, that was more of a struggle. We had to go actually meet with some of the insurers to allow that to happen, because right now FQHCs, under the way we're paid, and I'm not really good at knowing how that, because I'm the clinical side of things, but fee-for-service, or however or that bundled payment we get, there was some barriers about that. But in general, the specialists are getting paid. You have to use special codes, Q codes they're called, CPT. They are recognized as CPT codes, telehealth. The challenge for us is there is a fee where we could bill for the use of the equipment, and we've started to do that as well. So you do have to research that. You have to work with the insurers, and most of the insurers want to see this happen because they see better outcomes. So the Medicaid HMO that's in our area is funding all of this for us. We met with them last year, and after we collected these outcomes, we went to them, and we said, this really works, and they bought right into it. I think you were first, sorry. All the telehealth devices. What is it at our clinical center? Yes, okay. Okay, this is another good question. First of all, let me say the payers want to see, it's very specific where that patient can be in terms of an outpatient setting or an Article 28 center. So you have to go with what the insurers say, number one, as well as the Medicaid, Medicare guidelines. But there is remote monitoring that a lot of the home care agencies have been doing into the home using blood pressure monitor scales blood glucose monitors, I think O2 saturations, and that data is being sent to health centers through their EMRs so that changes can be made in a timely manner to patient treatment plans. But we are looking at, because I really want to look at the idea of when a patient's in and out of the hospital, sending a community health worker to their home with an iPad and hook it up to me so I can go over the discharge plans within 24 hours of that discharge. So we are looking at those concepts, but we have to prove them. I know the American Telemedicine Association has a work group looking at it right now. So it's like anything, you kind of got to dive in and do it and then go back and get the insurers to pay for it. But, yes, it's the technology. It's the wireless. You know, can you get a good connection? But I think Andrew's going to give a really good talk about something I'm interested in hearing. So. For the home monitoring, we're just beginning a work plan to look at that because somehow, you're right, we got to develop the workflow to some of the home care agencies, if you're interested in something like that, they have it all set up, the VNS services and stuff, because they've been doing a lot of CHF monitoring in particular. They've been getting it paid for, so they're really good at that. Any other questions?